This is Talk Is Cheap on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming on kpw.org. It's also archived on radioforall.net. And just a shout out to all the open mics, all the comedy open mics across the country, and the ones here in Eugene. Slice open mic 8 o'clock on Mondays. Okay, so today on Talk Is Cheap, we're kind of loosely affiliated with RootsAction.org, and they did an interview on Stop Cop City, because there's been a development. They've tried to have a referendum and get the people to vote on whether they want a forest or a training facility, a military-style training facility, in their backyard for people to play in. So that's what this interview is about with Mariah Parker from Stop Cop City and RootsAction.org. And Home Depot is being boycotted because they support the Home Depot Foundation supports Cop City. And so I'm have a campaign to revoke their charter, their corporate charter, because, you know, they're also known for union busting, and they sell Weyerhaeuser lumber, which Weyerhaeuser's sustainability site, if you go to their, if you Google Weyerhaeuser sustainability, even if you spell Weyerhaeuser wrong, and read their 10 reasons why they're methods are sustainable, you will see that they are completely not sustainable. And you know, people invest money based on this information, so it's very important to have accurate information for those. We don't want you to lose your money on timber. So I'm going to read, I'm going to read from my flyer for the campaign that I'm trying to do against Home Depot, and then like I say, Roots Action, Stop Cop City, just a word on Stop Cop City. The reason, and you'll hear this in my flyer too, is and my little news report on the profits that Home Depot made versus the pay of the people that work there. Home Depot is an example of what's wrong with state-sponsored corporatism, okay? They create the conditions that cause the apparent need for police, because they don't compensate people for their efforts enough for them to afford basic services, and so they end up in the street. So Home Depot and corporations like them cause the very things that cause us to need, supposedly, police, even though the police have never been a solution anyway. So the solution is paying people enough money and being in a community and a cycle within Earth's cycles and within the community cycles of a community. If I haven't said community enough, I don't know what else to do. So, yeah, that's coming up. Roots Action interview with Mariah Parker. You can hear my... I do an outline to do these shows. Okay, so yeah, Stop Cop City, very important, because that's going to spread. It's just it's a turning point to whether we become a militarized civilization or a Garden of Eden civilization. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. Support your local open mic comic. All right, so this is my little project that I'm hoping will take off, even though it's a long shot. I'm reading from this is a flyer that I'm putting up on bulletin boards and sending around. Stop Home Depot from selling your future every Wednesday, 5 p.m., Delta Highway and Green Acres Road. Home Depot buys lumber from Weyerhaeuser. Weyerhaeuser's sustainability site claims clear-cutting, among other destructive practices, is sustainable. Their sustainable timber certifications are used to lure investors into environmental social governance funds under false pretenses, keeping needed funding from available appropriate restorative building materials. Carbon can be sequestered by restoring the deserts created by deforestation, storing it in forests products extracted from homogeneous woods perpetuates a downward spiral of destruction and profit from reconstruction. Weyerhaeuser and Home Depot use a system called the Forest Sustainability Initiative. It is monitored by a board of timber industry professionals and paid environmentalists who claim, according to Weyerhaeuser.com, sustainability, Weyerhaeuser.com/sustainability, that clear-cutting is sustainable. Clear-cutting is monocropping. Monocropping is not sustainable under even the most diluted green standards. Weyerhaeuser's 10 frequently asked questions printout is nothing less than tree porn for timber brokers. The Home Depot Foundation funds the Atlanta Police Foundation. They've been accused by employees of union busting while donating over $1 million a year to a phalanx of retail lobby associations. Home Depot's corporate charter should be revoked for the burden it places on society. Close all Home Depots and convert them to transitional housing for the indigents they've caused. A home for the homeless instead of a depot of disenfranchisement. Their sites alone would make great solar farms. Let them be an example to other corporations that extract wealth from the community for short-term gains and do not manufacture and distribute goods and services appropriately within equitable living standards and earth cycles. Any support is welcome. Bring your own signs if you want, please. Suggested slogans: Home Depot sells future, log cert scam, Weyerhaeuser sustainability practices are not sustainable. I'm also going to put up a sign. I think I'm going to switch that to, instead of log cert scam, I think I'm going to make a sign that says ESG. ESG funds are a scam. Because they are. And that needs to be exposed. And that's starting to come out in the news. So thanks for listening. Tell your friends. KPW.org is the place to go. And RadioForAll.net, I'm going to start mentioning that much more often, because that's where you'll find that possibly 20 years of talk is cheap. So thanks for supporting independent media. On August 15, 2023, Home Depot, the world's largest home improvement retailer, reported sales of $42.9 billion for the second quarter of fiscal 2023, a decrease of 2% from the second quarter of fiscal 2022. Comparable sales for the second quarter of fiscal 2023 decreased 2%, and comparable sales in the U.S. decreased 2% also. Net earnings for the second quarter of fiscal 2023 were $4.7 billion. Earnings were $5.2 billion in the same period of fiscal 2022. We were pleased with our performance in the second quarter, said Ted Decker, Chair, President, and CEO. While there was strength in categories associated with smaller projects, we did see continued pressure in certain big-ticket discretionary categories. We remain very positive on the medium to long-term outlook for home improvement and our ability to grow share in a large and fragmented market. Our associates did an outstanding job delivering value and service for our customers throughout the quarter, and I would like to thank them for their dedication and hard work. The board of directors also authorized a new $15 billion share repurchase program effective August 15, 2023, replacing its previous authorization. Home Depot CEO Ted Decker, appointed in October 2020, has a tenure of 2.92 years. Total yearly compensation is $14.62 million, comprised of 9.4% salary and 90.6% bonuses, including company stock and options. He directly owns 0.01% of the company's shares worth $34.3 million. Home Depot announced in February that it was investing $1 billion in its hourly workers, bringing their average starting salary to $15 an hour. For KEPW News, I'm DJ Sus D.
All right, and with us today, we have Mariah Parker, who is a labor organizer in Atlanta, and by night, a Stop Cop City organizer. Welcome. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm stoked.
Yeah, so I assume that people watching this here are going to know a little bit about Cop City in Atlanta, but if you don't, it's a $90 million, I think actually the price may have gone up.
Is it 100? Is it 110? Have they been lying to us for years?
Right. It's at least $100 million police training facility. It'll take out like 300 acres in the Georgia forest. We also know that this is going to be used to train officers for quote unquote civil unrest. And it comes in reaction to what happened in 2020. We also know that police departments from all around the country, Los Angeles, New York, they will go to Atlanta to train. We also know that the IDF will come from Israel and they will come to Atlanta and train. And so there is, you know, there's so many different aspects to this. And then also, as we discussed prior to getting on, I believe that Atlanta is, you know, the epicenter right now for a generational fight. Like, we all have to throw down, and it's so imperative that that we win and that the people of Atlanta win. And they shot towards Agita, a 26-year-old climate activist who had their hands up seated in their tent, and they lied about the story about it, and they said that Tort shot first when really they friendly fired their own officer, planted a gun, and then 40 plus people have been charged with domestic terrorism directly, you know, from Joe Biden's DHS memos. And then the Atlanta Solidarity Bail Fund gets raided, and it was potential RICO charge, like RICO charges were discussed. And like, this is actual fascist. So before we get into it, I just want to ask, how are you doing? And what are the state of things in Atlanta right now?
I'm doing great. We just occupied the city, the municipal clerk's office for like 2 hours this morning. And you know, things like that, just being out amongst the people, being in community and experiencing the creativity and the resilience of this movement has been one of the most inspiring things in my life. I think, you know, as you're describing it as a generational struggle, it's probably be one of the most exciting, exhilarating things I've ever a part of in my entire life. So I've been great. As much as there are so many setbacks and hurdles and unknown, so many questions, so much danger, at the end of the day, like, I just take a lot of energy from the people out here that are doing the work. So I think the vibe in Atlanta right now, people are tired. June 5th, we had a mass mobilization of 1,000 people who went to Atlanta City Hall to give public comment for 15 hours, almost unanimously against this project. Only 4 people out of 15 hours spoke against, spoke for the project. And so that took a lot of effort. It took a lot of people, you know, staying up until 6 o'clock in the morning for the final vote, et cetera. And then when we lost, you know, it's felt heavy on the heart. And so at the same time, we're engaging in community care. We're trying to lift each other back up because we got this week of action coming up next week, starting this Saturday. You know, people all across the city, all across Georgia, allies from across the country are coming to Atlanta to help us fight back against the Atlanta Police Foundation. And so I would say we're back in an upswing again of just making preparations for what's going to be a mass gathering and hopefully in the effect.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're all watching from all over the country. We're all, you know, trying to throw down as we can. You know, here in Los Angeles, we've done banner drops and solidarity actions. And yeah, I hope people can get down there for the week of action in the forest. And I also want to ask, like, what's the state of your city council? How many people are supportive of your efforts, and what kind of relationship is there right now with the people of Atlanta and the city council?
Well, I gotta just tell you a little bit about what happened on June 5th.
Please.
Because coming into it, it was very unlikely we have the votes to kill Cop City. But there was like a brief hope that maybe we can get it sent back to committee where it could quietly die. And so there was pretty much some, like, can I curse on this podcast?
Absolutely.
There were some, the people who needed to look strong and brave standing against Cop City, but didn't actually want the blowback from the corporations, the Atlanta Police Foundation for it, could sink their heels in and say, tonight's the night that this dies, knowing that they did not have the votes for that. Meanwhile, standing in the way of like a middle of the road option that could have quietly killed the project over time. Effectively, the votes were split so that the project ended up sailing through with a majority of city council folks in favor. Wordlessly, mind you, did not give any explanation for why after 15 hours of public comment, they would approve this project, but nonetheless, it has seemed that perhaps we've had some allies. We had a lot of people who ran on the issue of Cop City that they were going to, you know, they would have voted against the project if they could. The time came for them to actually stand up against the Atlanta Police Foundation, and they caved. And actually just today, it was exposed that a bunch of them were like at a birthday party with like lobbyists from the Atlanta Police Foundation. Birthday party, no hate on like, you know, 1 year old, it's not their fault. But it really shows like at the end of the day where their loyalties lie. That you know, they want to sound big and bad when it, you know, it's election time, but then at the end of the day, they're going to cave to the corporations and the police foundation that are behind this project. So the state of things in Atlanta with regards to city council, we don't trust those hoes. Really, at the end of the day, we got two avenues of action that are like kind of fomenting as like, all right, this is how we're going to do it. Direct action has always been critical to the way this movement is operated. We're going to come after, you know, the banks. We're going to come after the insurance companies, the contractors, the corporations funding this. We have, you know, as you said, we have people all across the country, across the world who have been going after these multinational targets to let them know that the participation in this project is not acceptable. And we're going to keep doing that. And now we're trying to just go past the city council straight to the ballot box and try to put this question before the Atlanta public in November through like a referendum process to say like, hey, do y'all want us to repeal the lease for this land? Or are you cool with them having a giant military playground out where kids could be learning about the fish in the river?
Right.
What do you think? And we think the majority of people are going to be saying, you know, say like that. We want our forest back. So those are kind of, those are a couple of things that we're trying now that city council has clearly proven themselves untrustworthy at best, but just like actually evil at worst.
You know, it just shows the limits of quote unquote Democratic Party politics and identity politics. Because this is Joe Biden's America. This is, you have two, Democratic senators in the state. This is a Democratic majority controlled, local body. And all of this is still happening under all of that. And so I don't buy, you know, the things that they're pushing in regards to, you know, voting for these elected officials will actually change things. So you're trying to go past them. And yet, even with the referendum, you've been met with pushback from the state, and you had to do something today or yesterday that in relation to this referendum, if you could break down for us.
Yeah, so the clerk has been finding every single comma or line off in the petition we submitted for their approval as grounds for rejecting it and saying that, all right, we have to reset it and we have another 7 days to look at the new version you've submitted as a means to stall this. So yesterday morning, we filed a lawsuit against her in her capacity as the clerk and her personal capacity for, you know, effectively it's called a writ of mandamus, where it's calling upon the courts to force her to do her job. So this morning, like I said, we were down to City Hall. We occupied her office for 2 hours, demanding that they, you know, approve the petition, give it back to us so we can start collecting the 70,000 signatures we need to get this on the ballot. And while we were sitting there, she like sent me an email like, oh, actually, yes, you had the, you cited this code slightly wrong. It might confuse the public. Lady, people don't know about the code numbers. In any case, rejected it again. But nonetheless, we have called upon the courts to force her to do her job properly so that people can just participate in democracy, which I thought y'all loved. I thought Democrats were all about.
Right. It's wild that the city clerk in their capacity is even, you know, stunting you at this level. And you also have the week of action coming up this weekend, as you stated. Is there any sign of this referendum being able to collect signatures by this weekend?
I'm sure that their hope and prayer is that they can push it back.
Oh, man.
Another 7 days, so that all this momentum that is surging around the week of action to come, like the wave, you know, we missed the wave, and then maybe then they're not able to get their 50,000, the 70,000 signatures. We got 3,000 people that signed up to be volunteers, 2,600 of them in the city of Atlanta. We have like 50 people sign up to be neighborhood captains to make sure they've talked to everyone in their neighborhood. There are sixty out of like the 200 neighborhoods in Atlanta. So amazing. Like, they can try, but ultimately, the very fact of no matter how you feel about Cop City, you should feel badly about it, you should hate it. But if no matter how you feel about it, why would you not want people to just be able to decide? Like that, right. the sheer audacity of trying to stonewall a democratic process like this, regardless of how you feel about it, is very, very plainly fascist and should disturb everyone.
It should disturb everyone. And I think that if it happens and they, you know, don't get it to you by this weekend, I think it'll just piss everyone off more. And I think that it'll give you all an opportunity to really show and expose what they're doing and hopefully continue that momentum. I want to talk about a few more things in relation to this, just kind of about the diversity of tactics. I do want to ask you about the labor movement, but first, I want to ask, you know, someone on the ground from Atlanta about the outside agitators thing in the media and how, you know, this movement has really embraced diversity of tactics, and that meaning all the way to direct action and even sabotage and all that. And I think there's a lot of important lessons, and I'm not even saying that as a means of the length of action that people are taking. I'm saying that as in there is importance in how we move as a movement and whether people are judging certain actions people are taking, because I know there are people that don't support any electoral action people probably don't support the referendum, but you need to build a movement to stop it by any means necessary. And so can you talk about the outside agitators thing and the diversity of tactics?
Yeah, let me start with the outside agitators thing. As you mentioned at the top, in documentation that was, you know, found in open records requests, emails from the city, they themselves have said that over half of the people that are going to be trained at this facility are coming either from outside the city of Atlanta or outside of the state of Georgia. So that to me, point one, seems like a problem that is originating from outside the state in terms of people coming here to do damage to our right. community. Secondly, we have to look at the sources of funding for the project. So we're dealing with multi-million, billion-dollar corporations who are stealing those wages off of workers all across the United States, perhaps multinationally. And so the money for the project is also an issue of outside agitators coming in and deciding what projects they want to fund in our community. As right. well, some geographers at Mapping Atlanta, there's some people that, you know, are university researchers in geography. They actually mapped where the main power brokers in the, you know, in support of the facility live. Yes. Most of them don't live in Atlanta. Most of them don't even live in communities that are majority Black. Most of them don't even live in, they don't live in communities that are working class. They certainly don't live anywhere near the forest. And so again, a lot of the main power brokers for this problem, for this playground, are not from the city of Atlanta. And so we're seeing that a lot of the forces trying to make this happen are far greater in scale than the forces here locally. Right. And they're coming from all over the country. And so similarly, the people on the ground here in Atlanta have cried out help. They've said, we're being ignored, no matter how many hundreds of us there are, no matter thousands, no matter how doors we knock, no matter how times we call our city council, we're just outgunned. We're literally outgunned when we go march the streets and there's twice as many police officers as there are protest attendants. When the city hall is flooded with police officers, right. anytime people come to speak there. So they've called upon their wider networks and communities, folks that would be impacted by the militarization of their police forces that would come here, the people that are being exploited by the corporations that are funding this facility, the people who are gonna have to live in a burnt up planet if we don't do something about climate change by protecting the lungs of Atlanta that are being torn down to build this facility. So we're just trying to fight fire with fire, frankly. You know, there is a very robust movement locally that, you know, has been very, very grounded in like neighborhood knocking on doors, going to city council meetings for years. Mm-hmm. The attempts to try to paint things as, oh, people come in and stirring up trouble from outside of town, is projection on the part of people who want to build Cop City.
Right. And I think it's like people always say, well, don't you try to reach out to your elected officials and don't you write them? Don't you comment at city council? And, you know, it's important for people to do that. So the movement as a whole could be like, yes, this is what we've done. And they still won't listen to us. And then another avenue of action that the movement in Atlanta is taking is bring in labor. And I know that's, you know, part of your day job. And so I wonder if you can, you know, break it down for us, you know, how you're bringing in labor in Atlanta and what workers all over the country, how they can contribute.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, a large portion of the Cop City Project is privately funded through the Atlanta Police Foundation and donations from corporations that are probably in your own community, Home Depot, Delta, Chick-fil-A, Waffle House, Inspire Brands, which also is like the parent company of places like Dunkin' Donuts, Arby's, Baskin-Robbins, Buffalo Wild Wings, stuff like that. So anyone who is being underpaid by any of these corporations right now is paying for Cop City, no matter where you live. If you live in, you know, Edgewood, if you live in, I don't know, Taipei, you are paying for Cop City if you work for one of these corporations, because they're not paying y'all. You know, Chick-fil-A has been fined tens of thousands of dollars just in the last year alone for abusing child labor, in addition to like wage theft claims. So like the money they're not paying 15-year-olds is going to build Cop City. Delta has had just finished like a protracted years-long fight for a new contract that, you know, guarantees their employees a cost of living increase. They're literally arguing against paying people enough to live with the inflation so that they can build Cop City. And so we in like the labor community are trying to do that are aligned with this issue, because not everyone is. Yeah, there's police unions, unfortunately, and makes things complicated, but trying to raise what we're trying to do is raise the consciousness among workers that like not only are they like taking money out of your pocket that you'd be paying for childcare, paying to go back to school, paying to get a car, paying for your mom's like chemo, and they're putting it into policing you and destroying your planet. And how do you feel about that? And a lot of people, frankly, you know, how many people are for, against? A lot of people don't know about Cop City because a lot of people are not super plugged into politics because they're working at Waffle House for 40 hours a week and taking the bus home, which is taking 2 hours. So you Cop City agitating people around the fact like, yo, how do you feel? If you had $67 million to improve the city of Atlanta, what would you put it into? And not a goddamn flight attendant or someone working at Home Depot or somebody working at Arby's is going to tell you, you know what? I would love it if the cops had a playground to killing me at. Nobody wants that. Everybody wants affordable housing. Everybody wants more green spaces. Everybody wants free childcare. So I say all that because we're trying to get more workers kind of conscious to the fact that their exploitation is feeding this militarized beast that's being built in their backyard, and hoping that through that we can start having more people rise up against it. Because right now, frankly, the Labor Coalition, you know, AFL-CIO people in Atlanta have not spoken out against the issue. The Atlanta Police
AFL-CIO can't
building a couple of weeks ago, which is terrifying, but completely unrelated to any of this. Definitely not to keep labor in check or anything like that. But
wait, say that again, please. I'm sorry.
So they, for some reason, opened an Atlanta Police Department substation across the street from the building in which most of Georgia's labor unions are headquartered about 3 to 4 weeks ago. I don't think that's related whatsoever to the fact that more and more progressive organizations and organizations aligned with the working class are speaking out against this problem. Nothing to do with that at all. In any case, the people, you know, the unions are workers coming together to decide to struggle against something. And so they're trying to get more people woke up to the fact of this wage exploitation, wage theft, et cetera, going to Cop City, so that people might organize their workplaces to come out and say, yo, we're standing up and making it known that we have a stake in this business and we're not okay with the way that it's being operated to fund oppression. There we go. We got this petition.
Things are up here.
Folks,
plug this.
Yeah. So yeah, so I mean, we're trying to like get labor union members, workers, on board with sending a loud and clear message to the city of Atlanta, Atlanta Police Foundation, that we're not okay with the fruits of our labor being reinvested in our oppression, with the hope that as this momentum, you know, climbs, we might have like, you know, a power at scale to put real pressure on these corporations that are funding Cop City.
Yeah, absolutely. So if anyone in the labor movement wants to get involved, they can go to laboragainstcopcity.com. And I think, you know, what we're discussing here is that this movement is so intersectional, right? There's the labor, and then there's climate, and there's the anti-imperialist aspect, you know, training foreign militaries, or what people are going to be going to use Cop City for. It just encompasses so many things that I think there are enough people to come together to shut this down. I just think that it's a matter of will for people to actually throw down. And so I know that we're all rooting for you here. And I think there's also just a general, all of that wrapped together is that capitalism could potentially be the problem.
I'm starting to sense that it is the problem. When corporations get to come in and decide what happens to your neighborhood,
right,
the scale of like, just because I have $30 million laying around, I get to say the cops have a playground in the forest your kids used to play in. That capitalism.
And that they have the money to do that, right? And they have, as you explained, they have the money to do that because, you know, they're shortening their workers. They're not sharing in on the profits. And they have the ability to do that. And I think, you know, another underrated aspect of it is that these were especially made for, you know, to deal with uprisings after 2020, right? That they want to use it as a playground to get used to civil unrest. And so capital and the rich people are concerned about what they're fucking turning our world into. And they're like, wow, people are getting really pissed off at us. Instead of fixing any of these problems, we need to train and militarize our police force. So after the people are so far beaten down, they go out into the streets and to express their displeasure, they have a means to fight back against that.
Or when we start having food riots because the desiccation of our farmlands under climate change has made it impossible, it breaks down our, you know, food supply chain, We can make sure our bunkers are secure. That's, you know, a little dystopian, maybe a little far off, but it also intersects with the issue of climate change and the unrest that's likely to come from that when people just don't have access to, like, water, people are, you know, just really in dire straits because the situation we left our climate in.
Yeah, I mean, like these companies, if there is unrest and their storefronts are potentially being damaged, they have already supplied the police with money and training to come protect their property. And that's, you know, really part of the reason why the police exist as is, is to protect property interests of wealthy folks. And then you look at the crossover between the people in power and the wealthy. And it just starts, you start putting pieces together that, you know, although the federal government and, you know, corporations are so intertwined, it's even happening so far down to the local. And that's why it's so important to organize your local communities, organize your workplace, organize your household, because the most effective change you can have is with people that you're close with and in community with.
Period. Yeah. I mean, one of the most beautiful things about this movement is also how seriously it takes community care. So it's like, yo, organize your knitting circle, organize your soccer team, and not just to like march in the streets, but like make sure that folks have, you know, warm clothes for the winter, go to food to eat, things like food distros and skill shares and things that just make our communities more resilient has been such a beautiful way that the movement has built its own capacity and built our alternative systems to the ones we're describing so that like we can go over here and do our thing because we know how to feed our friends and we know how to keep our friends safe. So yeah, organize everybody, your church choir, your goddamn, I don't know, after school science fiction writing club. I don't give a damn. Organize everybody. We need everybody organized.
Your cipher circles.
Your rap circles. I might know about those once upon a time in my life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once upon a time, I thought you had, can we not talk about that on here?
No, bring it up. I'm playing. I'm just acting funny. Yet.
Okay. No, I once upon a time, I thought you were bringing out, you're going to drop some bars coming up, right?
On this podcast?
No, not on this podcast. No.
Tell me about that. No, yes, I do have a show at the Masquerade coming up, Masquerade in Atlanta, coming up with Chris Smalls and Steven Donziger and Marion Williamson. To raise money for Stevens Diggle Defense Fund and the Amazon Labor Union. It's a part of like a cross country tour that they're doing. I do some rap music in favor of liberation on occasion. So
I love it. And when what are the odds that Killer Mike comes out in support of Stop Cop City?
I'm gonna say it right now.
Okay.
Killer Mike, I challenge you to a rap battle about our respective positions on the issue of the Atlanta Public Safety Training Center. We only can laugh about our positions about the training center, but I'm gonna whoop that ass, let's just say.
Okay. I mean, I'll make sure that we clip that and we get that out there to Mr. Mike. And, he has to, his dad is probably gonna be trained there. So
his dad will be there. He's holding his hand during the rap
battle. Is there anything else you want to plug before the end of this?
Come out to the Week of Action. If you're in Georgia, if you're in the Southeast, if you love the environment and want to see it thrive and the people of Atlanta thrive, June 24th through July 1st, there's actions going on every day. Lots of ways to learn, skills for resiliency, take direct action, support the people of Atlanta. If you're in Atlanta, July 22nd, I'll be at the Masquerade with Steven Donziger and Chris Maws. And check me out on the internet, Mariah, F-O-R, Athens.
Yes. Thank you so much. People, check out the Week of Action coming up. Follow Defend the Atlanta Forest on social media. Also, we spoke about the referendum. You can follow them at Cop City Vote on Twitter and social media. Tap in by any means necessary. And we are going to be, the whole world is watching. And, honestly, we are behind you. And I really hope, and I know you all are putting in the organizing work and understand that, but you all feel that it is such a big thing and you're not like wrong about that. It is a huge thing and we appreciate everyone that's throwing down in the way that they are. And this will, set examples for the future. If the state and capital win, they're building cop cities everywhere. They're charging everyone with domestic terrorism. They're going to target bail funds. This is their plan, right? But if the people win, you all will have inspired so many people to fight like you have.
We're going to win. Stop Cop City. Cop City will never be built.
Stop Cop City.
Darkest night so painful. Do you hunger for love midst the torture of being one? On the passing light of easy, have you seen you inside? It's the being of
Thank you.
The sun to start staying.